Hanuman, of course, the old man himself, he knew all this in some sense. He seems to have managed to stay one step ahead of us in most respects, doesn't he? And every time we think we've pushed the boundaries of homeopathy, you have somebody looks back in the organ and says, yeah, but Hanuman said that too. And he invariably did, or at least he touched on it. This is from paragraph 9, I think it is. So that our indwelling, reason-gifted mind can freely employ this living, healthy instrument for the higher purpose of our existence. It's a tantalizing statement, is it not? All the more so because he doesn't tell us what that higher purpose might be. He doesn't give any kind of clue other than to say that there is one. And I think that that tells us something about the fact that Hanuman himself had a spiritual context for his healing work. You know, as far as he was concerned, yes, the job in hand is to relieve the sick, is to restore people to health. But that in itself was not the end goal. The purpose of that was so that they could do this, so that their indwelling, reason-gifted mind could now employ this healthy living instrument for the higher purposes. So in other words, all the work that we're doing to take away symptoms and relieve suffering is in fact just preparatory for the real work, for that human being. Do you get the idea? That's the kind of context that it seems to me that Hanuman held, is that we're removing symptoms and restoring health so that people can fulfill their divine potential as human beings. That's really what the job's about. And if that was true in Hanuman's time, it's certainly true today. Okay. There's a fairly characteristic journey of consciousness, I'm going to call it, that we go through in relationship to our own healing process. So I'm calling this the healing journey. And these are some of the features of it. It's very much an edited version. I could have easily made this a 10-step or a 12-step process, but I've kind of called it four today. And step one is the stage of symptom relief. In other words, we look outside until we're ready to look inside. This is the stage at which most people first consult a homeopath, and it's certainly the stage that most people are in when they consult a GP or a regular medical practitioner. In other words, I've got this problem, doc. Here it is. I'm expecting you to take care of it and fix it up. And you tell me when I'm cured, please. You know, that's the kind of consciousness with which we bring our bodies and battered minds and emotions to a health care practitioner initially. We basically bring it forth and we hand it over to someone else, and they are the one now responsible for restoring it to health and for deciding when that process is complete. You know, the doctor's discharged me now. Yeah? Well, the homeopath says I'm cured. So we've handed it over. So initially it's seen as something almost external to ourselves, even though it's our own body-mind process that we're talking about. I call that stage one. Stage two, and this of course is where the homeopath's role starts to come into its own, the educational role we already talked about, is where there's the dawning of self-responsibility. In other words, it occurs to me as a client that maybe some of the things that I'm complaining of that I thought had just happened to me, in fact, were connected to other things in my life. Maybe that there was some degree of, albeit unconscious, participation in my own suffering. And this is for most people, it's a gradual step to take. Some people, it's a blinding realization, oh my God. And often it's simply, there's an initial dawning of consciousness when a connection is made between things that were seen as separate. How long have you had these headaches? Oh, 6 years. So what happened 6 years ago? Oh, we went through a divorce. Oh, how was that for you? It's terrible. It's the worst time in my whole life. Huh. And how long you say you've had those headaches? 6 years. Huh. You didn't have them before then? No. And it's often amazing from where we're sitting, isn't it? We sit there thinking, how on earth could this person have not put those two things together? But they haven't. And we, of course, have been in that position ourselves too, where we haven't, and we still are in that position with regard to other things. We just cannot make the link. And it takes that act of putting it outside yourself and seeing it reflected back in order to be able to make the connection. It's suddenly the synapses go, zing, oh my goodness, I get it now. You mean to say that maybe there's some relationship between those two things. And as homeopaths, we don't necessarily attribute cause and effect. We're not always in that mode of saying, well, it's because of this that that happened. What we're really doing is just putting the, bringing the things together. There's a relationship between headaches and grief, or whatever it is in this case. So now we're looking for a remedy that encompasses that. So this, to me, is one of the great gifts of homeopathy, is that it pulls people out of that early stage of consciousness where we think it's all stuff happening to us. And it opens us to the possibility that there are some hidden meanings and hidden associations to the things that appear to be happening to us, and that in fact they're happening as part of a larger process. So that's stage two. A degree of self-responsibility comes through. However, stages one and two still have something in common, namely, we're still trying to get rid of the damn stuff. You know, whatever it is that's bothering us. And whether we decide that it just happened through bad luck, or whether it happened because of the life circumstance that we were in or so on, we still just want it to go away. That is the characteristic of this first two stages of consciousness, is that we want either someone else to take it away, or I want you to tell me what I can do to make it go away. So it's still a variation on the same theme. You get the idea? Stage three is a bit different. And I call stage three transformation through suffering. Because what comes through here is a recognition that through the process of dis-ease, suffering, becoming ill and recovering health or not, as the case may be, through undergoing that process, something changes within your own life and your own consciousness and your own awareness. Your development gets enhanced as a result of that. In other words, growth takes place. And you start to have a different relationship to it. So that rather than seeing the disease as the problem to be got rid of, whether it's psychological or physical or emotional, you start to engage with it in a way which is more seeing the value in it, in and of itself. And there's a recognition or an acknowledgement that, in fact, this is a necessary part of your growth. You needed to have developed that problem for whatever reason. And you can really take that on. Now, this is not something that we can make people understand or that we can tell people they should be thinking this way. And in fact, it's deeply inappropriate to do that. It's something that dawns in your consciousness when it dawns in your consciousness. And, you know, you cannot force that process to happen. But once it does happen, you could say there's no going back. And this is true with all consciousness growth, is that once you've expanded to a new level within yourself, you cannot pretend you don't know that. You might try. Because sometimes suddenly the implications of what we realize are often frightening to us. We think, oh my God, you know, I wish that weren't. So can I not just go back to being someone who gets fixed by somebody else? You know, that's the first response that often comes in. No, you can't. The genie, once it's out of the bottle, will not go back in, no matter how hard we try. So the other way of putting this is embracing your shadow consciously. It's using Jungian psychology terminology, which for those of you not familiar with, I'll fill that out a bit later on. But the idea there is to engage with both your suffering process and your healing process from a very different place within yourself. You're no longer standing in the place that says this shouldn't be happening, this should be taken away. In other words, you're accepting it. And then level four of the healing journey is to do with what I call transcending suffering, where there is a non-identification with that process. In other words, you're no longer defined by whether you're healthy or whether you're sick. So there's an acceptance that suffering comes and goes anyway. It's part of life, just like death is part of life. Ultimately, there has to be some kind of an embrace of this aspect of life, which we, as healers, we spend the better part of our life trying to, in some sense, delay death and avoid suffering. You know, we put a lot of time and energy into postponing the inevitable and mitigating the inevitable with our remedies and so forth. And yet the ultimate healing really is to recognize that this is what happens. In life, this is what happens. We grow, we suffer, we die, you know, get used to it. And that's a kind of a tough call, isn't it? But that is the ultimate recognition, really, that comes. And it may be your deathbed recognition, it frequently is for many people. That's really when a lot of the other stuff starts to fall away. It takes a brush with death for many people to have that kind of a shift, to realize, you know what, I could die any moment. It could all be stripped away anyway. So from this day forth, I'm going to live with that knowledge. Now what you see then is a radical shift happens in that person's life. They may still have the same disease. They may still have the same health problems. They may still have the same neurosis. But they live from a different center within themselves. Who's seen that happen or experienced that? Good. You know what I'm talking about. You get a sense of it.